The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
On a Monday afternoon, welcome to Sports Talk, 99.1 The Sports Animal. I'm Jimmy Himes, joined by Vince Farrar, pinch hitting this week for John Wilkerson. Vince, how are you?
Good, Jimmy. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How was your time off?
It was good. You know, just enjoying time with the family. We stayed in our little circle to be safe because, obviously, as you know, Florida is the worst spot for COVID right now. And so we stay in our little circle to keep my mom and brother-in-law and family safe. And I was able to get tested and was negative before going down just to make sure they were safe. Got tested when I came back just to make sure and was negative there. So hopefully people will do the same thing when you're traveling. Either quarantine, get tested, just make sure you're not bringing anything, even if you feel fine, which I do. So it was great. Mom's cooking. I wish it would have been normal, do the normal social butterfly visits that I usually do, but it wasn't the case, but we made the most of it. But appreciate it. Good to be on with you.
Well, good to have you. We have got a ton to cover. First, we're going to tell you that we're going to be joined by Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. We've got a lot to cover with NASCAR. We've also got the potential of IROC returning. We'll get Doc's take on that. Rick Bosich is going to join us. He's a former sports writer with the Louisville Courier-Journal. He's now with the TV station in Louisville. We'll talk to him about what's going on with Louisville, about pay cuts, about the potential dropping sports. What's the ACC effect on things? So we look forward to talking with him about all that. Al Brown's going to join us at 6:15. Al is going to talk to us about the Carroll Lawson hiring at Duke. Carroll Lawson, of course, was an All-American at Tennessee. She's won an Olympic gold medal. She was an assistant for the Boston Celtics before she was hired. We had a late notice from Rob Lewis. He has a conflict. We will not be joined by Rob Lewis today, and we will try to reschedule him for tomorrow. But anyway, let's go ahead and jump to our news and notes. Brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people you can trust. So with the rule out there that says that if foreign students on student visa, if they take online classes only, they're supposed to be deported. Well, I checked with the University of Tennessee, and they have four foreign players on the basketball team, and I am told that there's a way around it, that each one of them would in some way take an in-class class, and they would be fine. So there would not be an issue with the four Tennessee players that are foreign players. Uros Plavsic is expected to arrive tonight. Santiago Viscovi is not here yet. He is the only one that has not arrived. We don't know when he's expected to be here. Carroll Lawson taking the Duke job. So this has been interesting. I've talked to a number of people about this. I will tell you this. A really good source who talked to Carroll Lawson a lot said that Lawson had told this person a little while back she had no interest in being a college coach. Well, then, because she was doing very well with ESPN, she was traveling, she was playing, she was doing a lot of stuff, no interest in being a coach. Then she becomes a Celtics assistant, and then she gets the Duke job. Well, that raised this question. Why didn't Tennessee hire her? She did interview for the Tennessee job. I don't know everything that went into it. Maybe Tennessee looked at it and said, we're going to go with the coach who has done this for a number of years, and Kelly Harper has coached for a number of years at different schools. So she had the experience there over Carroll Lawson. And then I was told Lawson also, with what she was making with ESPN, was like, okay, money-wise, this is what it's going to take to get me. And I don't know. I'm not 100% sure of this, but I'm not knowing that Tennessee was ready to go to that number. But a lot of interesting things about her. 13 years she was with the WNBA. So Carroll Lawson going to Duke. Also, Vince, I'll ask you this one. I got asked this yesterday on the TV show with John Pennington. Which coach will have the most success over the next 5 to 7 years? Kelly Harper or Carroll Lawson?
Ooh, that's a great question. I have a feeling that Carroll Lawson is going to be very successful. Yes, she doesn't have the experience, but she understands people. She understands the game. I think being in her roles, that in broadcasting has allowed her to see how things operate from a lot of different ways. She's so smart. She's good at she's been good at everything she has done. So if she puts the right staff around her, which again, I give her the benefit of the doubt that she will, plus the program that they have there at Duke, I might side, despite the lack of experience, I might side with Carol Lawson and Duke just on the giving her the benefit of the doubt of how good she is at everything she's done. What was your answer, Jimmy?
My answer was Kelly Harper, and here's why, and I think it's a close call. First off, I think that Carol Lawson faces a huge rebuilding job at Duke. I don't know that they're in really good shape right now. The other factor is Harper does have coaching experience. Lawson does not. And, yes, I know you can find examples of Larry Bird. He didn't have any coaching experience. He goes to the Pacers and does an outstanding job. I do get that can happen. The other thing is Tennessee has 3 5-star players committed for next year. That's a pretty good jump start on Carol Lawson. So I went with Harper because of those reasons. I do think it's a close call, but that was my rationale on taking Harper over Lawson. By the way, in the Duke release, Lawson said that she had always wanted to be a coach, which is contrary to what she had told a source of mine. Also, her dad wanted her to go to Duke over Tennessee. I remember that during the recruiting process, which I thought was pretty interesting as well. All right, a couple of other notes out there. The Pac-12 commissioner, Larry Scott, tested positive for COVID-19. He is doing okay. The Pac-12, of course, joined the Big Ten and going with conference games only. The SEC is going to have to make a decision there pretty soon, announce something pretty soon. There was a meeting with SEC athletic directors today with the commissioner. That was a preset meeting, but I guarantee you they're discussing the future of the league, how they're going to handle that. I do not think they're going to make a decision today. I could be surprised by that. We shall see. But in regard to Notre Dame, so Notre Dame has had to cancel at least 3 of its games. The ACC has already indicated, hey, you need an opponent, we'll work in the rotation. The ACC has not yet decided to go on conference games only, but I do think that they would find a place to fit Notre Dame into the schedule if they can get them on board. So I don't think Notre Dame is going to have any problem filling out its schedule, provided we do have football this year. This was also something interesting, Vince, and I want to save it completely for a topic later, but I did think it was interesting that Josh Kendall for The Athletic, who covers South Carolina, said that South Carolina, he thinks, would favor conference games only, but they do want Clemson in the rotation. They want to play Clemson, and the thinking is, why not? They're in the same state. They will have probably the same protocols. They don't want to lose the South Carolina-Clemson game, which also makes me think of Kentucky-Louisville, also makes me think of Georgia-Georgia Tech. So it would be an interesting situation if conferences say conference games only plus one. I wonder if they do that.
Florida State is another example.
There you go. That's right.
Yep. Yep. Look, if you were filling the stadium, Jimmy, then I can understand you not wanting to lose that. And, yes, you don't want to break the streak of years of playing those opponents, and the rivalries mean a lot to the fan base. But this is a unprecedented year. So if there's one year that you're skipping it and then going back to normal, it's not ideal, but it also would be something that I think – everyone would just kind of have to, because not everyone has those same natural rivals, then what do? You give everyone the choice of go grabbing one other non-conference game? That takes, do it with a Power 5? Then how about being able to find a dance partner for that? So I understand them wanting that game, but it's just such an unusual year. I would be surprised if they did that and didn't just keep it within their family. But having the continuity of the Power 5 conferences and their health and safety measures, that's a big reason why this is all happening. And we can get into it definitely in more detail later.
I also wonder how much money might be available if you played that game. I think that might be a part of that consideration, too, right, for the TV finances. All right, a couple of the notes out there. Brigham Young and Hawaii have already lost the first 4 games of their season, so they're scrambling to try to get their schedule intact. The top-rated cornerback in the country, Tony Grimes, out of Virginia, said he is ready to reclassify. He is going to graduate early and then play at North Carolina this year. One thought is, I don't know if this necessarily pertains to him, there is the thought that there might be some high school athletic associations in the country that are not going to play football, and maybe his is one, but then North Carolina might not play football either. So I'm not sure exactly whether he's going to be benefiting from that or not. All right, I do want to mention this too. SEC football media days would have started today. The SEC announced a while back they were going to go virtual meetings. They never postponed the virtual meetings. They just postponed the actual meetings. They have not set a date for the virtual meetings. I've been in touch with the SEC office multiple times every week, and they have not reset that date. But I do think it's interesting the ACC has postponed its virtual football media days that were set for July 21 to 23. So I don't know the delay for the SEC other than I had been initially told, and Vince, I think you were in on part of this with the SEC office. They were trying to find, okay, when's everybody going to report? When's everybody going to be available? How do we set this schedule up? Now I wonder if they're waiting to see whether or not we're even going to have football this fall.
Well, and if we have it, and then it went in what form? Because, Jimmy, the point of the media days is to learn about the players and the teams. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to ask about the players and the teams. They're going to ask about how the season's going to work, how you're going to deal with this, what this scenario, that scenario. Because there's so much unknown, the focus won't be on where ideally and how it's put together to be. So I think they'd like to avoid that kind of thing until they know how the season's going to go. Jimmy, I don't know how you feel about this, but I've actually thought about this a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if they scrap the media days across the country, even virtually, because it might end up being so late before we find out exactly how the season is going to play out that they're going to be in a scramble mode just to get the season in and get their teams prepared, and then to take a day to do a media. I think that might be a possibility. What do you think?
No, I think it is a possibility, but also if they do it virtually, I don't think it's going to be a day. I think it'd be a two-hour block.
Yeah, that's true. But, hey, they're so far, they may be so far behind, Jimmy, that the coaches may say, we can't even afford this. And then the student-athletes as well, we're going to have them come in. So, yeah, I don't know. I think they'd like to avoid all the hypotheticals that will be off of their football team. The point of that whole thing is to talk about the players and the teams, and the way we're going, that's not even going to be what it's about.
Yeah. A few other notes. The Washington Redskins have officially announced they will have a name change. That was not unexpected. The National Junior College Association is likely going to move all sports to the spring. They're looking at having 7 football games that would play between March to June. I don't understand going to June with your junior college games. You're only playing 7. You don't need that many months to get your games in. So I thought that was interesting. I'm mentioning this because it doesn't affect this area, but New Mexico's Athletic Association for High School has announced they will have no contact sports in the fall for high school sports. So that affects football. It affects soccer. And you just wonder how many states are going to follow suit with that. I don't know of that many that have made a declaration at this point. Also, a few other notes in golf. Colin Morikawa wins the weekday tournament at Muirfield Village. He was 3 down with 3 to play to Justin Thomas. Thomas bogeyed 2 of the last 3 holes. Morikawa got a birdie. Then on the 3rd playoff hole, Morikawa beats Justin Thomas. So really exciting action there. We'll have a lot more on Golf Talk from 7 to 8 with my co-host Braxton Hunter. All right, a few other notes out there. Maryland has suspended voluntary workouts. They had 9 positive tests. Not all were in football, but they have suspended those workouts. USA former gymnastics coach Terry Gray is arrested in Las Vegas, charged with multiple counts of lewd acts with a minor. It just disgusts me every time I see a story about some coach who took advantage of the athletes that they were working with, training, or trying to help pull stunts like that. Put them under the jail. Florida State is going to cut its athletic department budget by 20%. 20%. That's a pretty significant chunk. A few other notes. Russell Westbrook has tested positive, one of the bigger names to test positive. And then there was a player for the Rockets that didn't realize the quarantine rules, so he left his room. And so now he's got to go back into quarantine and face further testing because he didn't know he wasn't supposed to leave his room in Orlando. Vince, you wonder how many other NBA players don't know they're not supposed to leave their room.
Oh, you mean he didn't read his 110-page manual on all of the safety measures in the bubble? That's shocking.
Apparently not. you would think they could narrow it down to, here are five things you got to pay attention to.
Right, here are the cliff notes, the highlights. Yeah, exactly.
a bit of sad news. Tennessee basketball, a former All-American, Ed Wiener, has passed away. Outstanding player for Tennessee from 1952 to 55. He led Tennessee in scoring and rebounding as a sophomore, earned All-America honors in 54 and 55. He was 87 years old. He died Sunday in Memphis. So a sad note with that. When we come back, we've got so much more to cover. We've got some NASCAR to touch on with Dr. Punch when he joins us. We're going to talk about what's going on with Bristol, the All-Star race that's coming up, the amount of fans they hope to have there. And we also have a ton of notes about the impact of canceling some of these non-conference games that it will have on other Group of Five teams, FCS teams, just some really intriguing numbers that we'll pass along to you when we come back. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. With Vince Ferrara, I'm Jimmy Himes. You're listening to Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Not so much our job as it is our obsession. 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrara. To join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Let's go to the phones where Jim is our first caller. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Afternoon.
You know, if we don't play any football this year, does that mean that Tennessee's losing streak against Bama is over with?
Yes. You may have to put an asterisk on it. Maybe.
I'll take it.
They'll put one on it in Tuscaloosa. You may not find that asterisk in Knoxville.
You know, I wanted to ask you this serious question. With these conferences deciding to play conference only, if we even get that far, you know, all of the major schools have contracts to play smaller schools, and the smaller school's going to get 800,000 or a million or whatever, which is a huge part of their budgets. Do those schools that, if they don't get to play the big boys because the big boys are playing conference only, are they just totally out of luck? Will there be negotiations to see if they'll get any money at all? Because let's say Ohio State is going to play conference only. Let's say Ohio U is on their schedule, and I don't know if they are or not, but an in-state school that they're not going to play because they're not in conference, but Ohio State would go to, say, play Rutgers in New Jersey, and I don't know if that's, you know, what happened or not, but they are in conference. Do you see, has this issue been talked about of what the smaller schools may end up being able to do to get any money?
We talked about it a little last week, and here's what I read, which is interesting. It depends on the language in the contract. I can't cite the exact language, but I read where there was some language in an SEC contract that said an SEC team had the prerogative to cancel a game. Now, I don't know if they have if that's typically been weather-related because you've had hurricanes that have caused Florida and some other schools to cancel games. So I don't know if that was a parameter. But there was also a Power 5 athletic director, a Group of 5 AD that said that there would be some Group of 5 teams and other teams that would fight to get some of that money from those schools. But it depends on how the contract is written, is what I read. So let's say you were supposed to pay, Auburn's supposed to pay UMass like $1.9 million. Now, again, most of the SEC contracts are covered, but let's just say they weren't. UMass says, You can't get out of this contract. You're playing other games, so you can't blame it on the pandemic. If you're playing games, you could have easily played us. So what does it cost UMass to travel to Auburn? I don't know, $300,000 for everybody to come down? So Auburn gives them $1.6 million instead of $1.9 million. That's possible. I think what you're going to see are some of these schools try to get as much money as they can in mitigating circumstances. But on those contracts that are ironclad, I think some of these schools are just out of luck. Vince, you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, Jimmy, you guys may have talked about it last week, but Michael Casagrande from AL.com had a paragraph that's in Alabama's non-conference scheduling that I'm not sure if similar wording is in all of these, but it's in Alabama's, and it says, in the event of fire, flood, hurricane, war, invasion, hostilities, rebellion, insurrection, confiscation by order of government, military or public authority, or prohibitory or governmental authority, including that of the Southeastern Conference or the National Collegiate Athletic Association, making it impossible or impractical to play the game, both parties shall be relieved of any and all obligations of this agreement. That seems to cover a lot of things in that. And
I'm trying to say it in fewer words, but yes.
Okay,
that's right.
But that's what you're referring to? Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm referring to.
But yeah. But yeah, to me, the conferences wouldn't come out if they knew they couldn't get out of those scot-free. They wouldn't come out and declare they're going conference only. I think they're going to be on their own to try to pair up with each other to get some games. Now, the money is probably going to be dried out and not much there. Even if you go to a higher level group of five, you know, a Boise State or a Cincinnati or someone in the AAC to get matched up with them, that's probably not going to bring you a whole lot of money either, especially without that home gate. So I do think it's just unfortunate for those group of fives, and they're, I don't know how they make up that money, honestly.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see how this all comes out, because those smaller schools, the lifeblood of their athletic programs, are getting these big payoffs from playing these big schools. And I don't know. I just see somewhere down the line where some lawsuits may be coming out of this. Of course, everything today is lawsuit, you know. Well, guys, I appreciate the information. You guys stay well. Have a good afternoon.
You too, Jim. The language I read that was it was much shorter. I mean, it's the same thing, Vince. It covers it. Mm-hmm. But under the prohibitory authority of the SEC, both parties shall be relieved of any and all obligations of this agreement. That's what the SEC contracts typically have. You would think that the Pac-12 and the Big Ten would have something similar. I don't know what's in their contracts. I just know there was a group of five, unidentified group of five AD last week that said, hey, we're going after some of this money. You can't tell us you can't play us, and you're playing all these other games. So that's what I think might get interesting in this regard. So
yeah, for the group of fives will try, but to me, yeah, you know, the legal teams for those conferences have already done the legwork to where they feel good that they're not going to be on the wrong end of those decisions.
You would think. Yeah, you would think. So that's going to be interesting to see. So, and by the way, and I mentioned this last week, I'll mention it again, I kind of feel bad for Kent State. So they got Penn State on the schedule. They've also got Alabama and Kentucky. And if the SEC goes conference only, Kent State is out $5 million. That's 17% of their total budget at Kent State.
Yeah, their athletic budget. The Alabama game is 25% of their football budget. So, it's just so devastating for those group of five schools.
Yep. That's Vince Ferrara. I'm Jimmy Himes. When we come back, we'll be joined by Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. We'll talk NASCAR. Get your questions ready for Doc Punch. This is Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Hi, Colin.
Oh,
Welcome back to Sports Talk with Vince Ferrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. Pleased to be joined now by Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist. Doc, how you doing?
I am good, guys. Good to be with you.
You sporting some New Balance?
Actually, I am. I always have my New Balance, the most comfortable shoes that I wear. This past weekend, because we all need to be wearing masks, obviously, if we're in close proximity or indoors. So we decided to go out to a trail and sort of walk and hike and had my New Balance on. And I realize they're great shoes to work out or walk in, but, man, they were so comfortable and so comfortable, which is one of the things that New Balance talks about, is one of the reasons that shoes are so popular, because there's a width and stability associated with those shoes. Anyway, long story short, they're even better hiking, so I really enjoyed wearing them over the weekend, and I have them on right now, just finishing a workout and getting ready to chat a little sports. But love the folks at New Balance of Knoxville, with the perfect fit every time. They'll go in and say over 75 models to choose from. Go in and see Sharon and her fine staff, and they'll take great care of you.
Doc, there was a lot of action in Kentucky over the weekend, so we had a truck race, a couple of Xfinity races, a cup race. Cole Custer, now I read this, I thought it was interesting. So he has a last lap pass. He wins the race, the Cup Series. He is the first rookie to win in nearly 4 years. That's a rookie on the circuit. And the first rookie since 2007 to win a non-rain-delayed Cup race. A big win for Custer.
Yeah, it was what an incredible finish. It was a restart. They had four caution flags in the last 59 laps. And Kevin Harvick, who had never won there, the only track, major track that in NASCAR now that he had not won on previously, he somehow cycles up from like 19th place through all the cautions and pit stops. He's up there trying to lead, Martin Truex Jr., Ryan Blaney, and then they have a restart, and with one lap to go, they are four wide across the start-finish line with Cole Custer coming down on the inside. Harvick and Blaney bounce off each other. Blaney was on the apron. His car caught the apron, came up, got the inside of Harvick. Truex was on the outside. He and Harvick got together a half a lap before that and got Harvick a little bit out of shape, who was leading. It was a wild, wild finish. And guess what? This kid, Cole Custer, he's a rookie, as you mentioned, and he has a split second to make a decision. And he makes a decision to turn hard left and go down on the bottom of the racetrack on the final lap, and he's able to make the pass and hold him off on the white flag lap and get the win. Yeah, becoming the first rookie to win a NASCAR Cup Series race since, Chris Buescher did it back in 2016. So not only does he win the race and get his first victory, he's a teammate of Kevin Harvick, so he outruns the alpha dog on the team for the Stewart Haas team. He punches his ticket to the All-Star race this Wednesday night at Bristol Motor Speedway, and he pushes himself in the playoffs, in the championship playoffs, end of the year by getting that win. So a huge, huge day for Cole Custer. I think he had led a total of four total in his Cup career as a rookie this year prior to yesterday. So, yeah, I mean, that just goes to show you that you never say die, and they kept working on the car, and suddenly there he is in victory lane.
He had won an Xfinity race on this same track last year, so I would think that familiarity might have helped him in the Cup race, Doc.
It did. I think it did, but these Cup cars with so much more horsepower, the power-to-weight ratio, the rules for the Cup cars are quite a bit different in terms of the draft numbers, the high downforce numbers. But it's a good point, Jimmy, because he becomes just one of a handful of drivers, by the way, in NASCAR history, to now have won a race in the Truck Series, the Xfinity Series, and the Cup Series. So he's a winner in all the Stepping Stone Series going up to Cup, and now as a rookie gets that win. His dad, by the way, Joe Custer, is the president of Stewart Haas Racing. So he's the president of the company, and Cole didn't get there because his dad was president. He earned it. He was a very promising driver coming, as I mentioned, through the trucks and through the Xfinity. But his dad wasn't even there. His dad was at home. Watching a race at home because, spectators couldn't come and you're limited by, I think, 16 total people per team. So his dad is sitting there and watches his son win his first ever Cup Series race from his own living room, jumping up and down with his mom. But, you know, how cool is that for a young man to get that kind of win? And the sad part here again is the fact that the fans couldn't be here to see it.
Vince, you got a question?
Yeah, Doc, how do you think NASCAR has handled the season overall with its return? Obviously, there was the Jimmy Johnson positive test that he's bounced back from, but how would you summarize how the return has gone for NASCAR overall?
Well, great question, Vince. I don't know if anyone could have done anything any better than what they did, given all the uncertainty and the circumstances of what we've dealt with COVID and the shutdown, the quarantine. You know, motorsports, as we mentioned before, is uniquely geared to be able to compete because it's an outdoor sport. The spectators, while you love having them there, you know, you can compete and you're able to get social distancing and separation because of the way the teams are pitted and they're separated on pit boxes. The drivers can come to the racetrack, sit in a motor coach or a car in the infield and walk right to the car and get in. They're not allowed to go to the garage area. There's no practice, no qualifying. NASCAR was able to get back going because they were able to utilize tracks that were in a one-day drive to and from where most of the race shops are. So you didn't have to get on airplanes. You don't have to stay in hotels. You don't have to go to restaurants. And so you can maintain some separation and some safety there. You know, they really worked well. Politically, they really worked well, if you want to say across the aisle, because they had governors who were Republican governors, Democratic governors, others who stepped up to say, okay, we get what you're trying to do. We want to see it in action. So they went to South Carolina. Then they went to Darlington. Then they went to Charlotte. Then they went to, you know, to Martinsville, Virginia, Bristol, Tennessee. You know, I think the Texas governor was the very first one to step up and say, you can come here. The only problem was it's a little too far to go on a one-day trip. But that gave others the idea that, hey, we can do it this way. And I think NASCAR has done a phenomenal job. And now the payoff is going to be probably this Wednesday night. I realize there's a lot of concern. We can talk about that in a minute. But the fact that you're having the All-Star race back in Bristol, you know, in the state of Tennessee, but they're going to allow up to 30,000 fans there. They've got a plan how they're going to do it and how specifically they're going to let them in and out. But and the fact they're getting new fans every day, fans of other major league sports that can't compete or aren't competing for whatever reason, they're turning on and watching a live NASCAR race, even in prime time during the week. So I think the numbers reflect that, and I think the sponsorships on the car that we're seeing starting to emerge now are also reflecting that.
Doc, there have been the stories. I saw one on USA Today that talked about how sports has access to so many of these tests, and they're testing their athletes repeatedly, not only before they enter a bubble or are on campus, but even when they're there, those follow-up tests within. Do you think that puts a burden on the rest of the nation in sports having access to as many tests as they are, or is it a mixed bag? How do you view sports gaining access to these testing when some people in their neighborhood might have to wait 2 to 5 days or in a 2-hour line to get a test?
Well, I mean, it's obviously, you know, there's a privilege there involved with what they're doing. And many times that's associated with a private lab that someone's willing to pay the bills for to get a private lab to fly in this and fly this in and fly it out and get the test done. And you and I don't have access to that because we don't have the financial resources to do that. On the other hand, there are sports. Sports are not being given priority. For example, I was talking to a colleague of mine an hour ago who's supposed to be one of the broadcasters on the U.S. Open, the tennis, and they're still trying to decide, you know, is it going to happen? It's supposed to happen August 31st, you know, at Flushing Meadow. The problem is many, many of the tennis players, and whether you're in Serbia or France or whatever, they may or may not be allowed to come back or may not want to be allowed to come back in the U.S. to compete. They still have that, and they're not going to make exceptions. If they can't get in, they can't get in. Now, their slot will be taken by someone else. So it's a plus and minus. It's a, you know, yes, the testing is available, but sometimes the athletes, I know there was a friend of mine that's a college, who's a son of a college golf coach, and many of his golfers on the golf team are from or live outside this country. They can't get back either. They don't think they're going to be able to get back to play golf if there's a golf season. So there's a lot of negatives that they have to endure, especially those who live outside the country.
Doc, there was interesting also in Kentucky with the race and the Xfinity race. Austin Cindric, he won back-to-back days on Xfinity races, and I read that's the first time that someone has done that in the same series since 1971. A guy named Richard Petty was the last to do that.
Yeah, whatever happened to him, by the way? Did he amount to much, this Richard Petty guy? Yeah, yeah. How about that? I mean, and Austin Cindric, if you meet this guy, Jimmy, you and Vince meet Austin Cindric. First of all, he's about 6'7". His dad, Tim Cindric, was a really good college basketball player up in Indiana. And so he's the president of Team Penske. And then Austin looks like his dad. He's very athletic, but he grew up in open wheel racing, driving open wheel cars on road courses and street courses. So he had getting into a stock car last year. I mean, he had not won ever on an oval in a stock car until he won Thursday night in the Xfinity race at Kentucky. And then he wins again on Friday night. How about that? So he wins back-to-back. His very first two ever oval track wins, you know, in a stock car are at Kentucky. And he did a heck of a job. He drove a smart race. He's a very, very intelligent kid, very poised, very composed, stayed out of trouble. Now, there was some shuffling and pushing and shoving during the race. And after the race, there was a little bit of a fight in the pits between two fairly notable drivers, and Noah Gragson and Harrison Burton, Jeff Burton's son, over they agreed to disagree, and then they agreed to push and shove and swing and disagree.
That is a pretty
aggressive a racing series there. But hey, Cindric comes out on top in both nights.
I wonder if they were wearing masks.
I didn't see any masks anywhere. And if they would have had them on, they'd have been pulled off by each other as they were grabbing uniforms and being trying to be separated by about. And neither did the 25 people who descended on the fight and tried to pull them apart. None of those guys had masks on either. But all I can say is, if they keep doing that kind of stuff and show that kind of intensity, I don't want to see them fight. But that kind of intensity, that kind of I want it that bad. That reminds me of the early days of racing. It reminds me of the Allisons and the Yarboroughs and stuff. That's people watching, people who don't have anything else to watch and are watching that would be watching something else in sports. That's a win-win for NASCAR in terms of the fans.
Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch, ESPN. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. When we come back, we'll talk to him about the possible return of the IROC series and also what Bristol is going to try to do in terms of social distancing with the up to 30,000 fans that they hope to might draw for the All-Star game this Wednesday night. With Vince Ferrara, I'm Jimmy Himes. You're listening to Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Making average people feel more attractive since 1876. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrar. Our special guest, Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist. Doc, I want to ask you about this. You got Stuart Everham. They're looking to recreating the IROC series. What else can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the International Race of Champions was a series that was developed by former NASCAR Vice President Les Richter and Jay Signore years ago under the tutelage of Roger Penske, where you brought the best drivers from around the world in any series, from Formula One, from IndyCar, from NASCAR, from road racing, off-road, wherever, the top two or three drivers. You put them in identically prepared cars. They didn't get to pick the car. They didn't get to bring their own car. And you put them at a racetrack, and you let them race to see who was the best driver. The cars are the same, essentially the same, and they said, who's the best driver? They ran them on road courses and ovals. Unfortunately, there were many of the cars, the races were on ovals, and so the guys who were stock car drivers or some of the guys who had more oval track experience maybe had a little bit of an advantage. But still, there were others who won back in the day. So And so that series went away. It paid $1 million to win the series, to be the highest point total winner for the four races. That went away for lots of reasons, primarily financial. Now Tony Stewart and Ray Evernham have decided to put together a series with a few other principal owners, and it's going to be an IROC series similar to an IROC series, but it's going to be all on short tracks. My understanding is they may run six races during the summer at notable short tracks. It could be dirt tracks, it could be asphalt tracks, and they're not really sure yet if they're going to invite current drivers, recently retired drivers, legendary drivers, whoever wants to compete may be allowed to come compete. That series, the races, will air on CBS. They do have a commitment that they'll air on CBS. So obviously they got a great network deal. They're still putting it together. They really wanted to roll it out in this summer. Obviously the pandemic had a little bit to do with that, but they're looking toward the summer of 2021. A lot of people are very excited about that. So it's basically, how do you determine who's the best driver? And my understanding is the format, they will show up at a racetrack. These drivers will show up, could be the best from Europe, the best in Formula One, the best in IndyCar, the best in NASCAR, wherever they come from. And they will draw for cars. And then with each car, there is a crew chief that comes with that car. And you get that crew chief in that car that week, and you try to compete and see what you can do. So they're trying to make the playing field as level as possible.
And I understand Tony Stewart might race.
I can't imagine you could keep him out of the car there. He loves short track racing. He loves sprint car racing. I think he's in South Florida this past week at an event, and then he's all over, right? He loves it. He loves that more than about anything else. I mean, he's always said, he did the stock car racing and NASCAR cut series racing to live, but the short track racing, he said, I live to race that. I mean, I love that. That's his passion. That's where he grew up and came from. So I would imagine you might be surprised some of the other names that might come out of the woodwork that have recently retired or from other series that say, hey, I want to do that. I want to run a couple of those races.
I don't know which driver it was, but one of them said that driving in the truck series and stock car, et cetera, has made him a better driver. Do you think that's true of most drivers?
I think it's like anything else. If you're a Cup Series driver and you step down and you run the Xfinity Series car, or you run 12th to 15th in the Cup car, and you go down and you get an Xfinity car and you finish second or third or fourth, you're running the top lead pack, or you go to a truck and you win the race, that builds your confidence. And I think confidence and attitude are so important in any athlete, no matter what you do, whether you're trying to hit a curveball in Little League or whether you're trying to win a stock car race or an Indy car race. If you've got comfort level and a confidence level, then you climb back in that Cup car, you're a different driver. I think it does help them, absolutely.
That's Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. If you got a question, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. You're listening to Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.